Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Wednesday, that's unusual, November 23rd, 2011. I am your host, Greg Luca, and I am joined today by a writer who has a lot to be thankful for. We have Matt Watts.
Gobble, gobble.
Yeah, he's the only guy that I could get to come out for our day before Thanksgiving spectacular. I guess everybody's heading home, doing all kinds of big things over there, and then ready to reconvene on Saturday before the big Florida State game. So, anyway, we'll take you through the last week in Florida football. We got some stuff we've talked about in media this week to go over. We got a Furman game to recap a little bit, and we have this Florida State game to preview. But before that, I want to revisit something we touched on when Tyler and Cody were here. And it's the idea of using the word clown.
Okay.
Or clowning.
I'm interested for this conversation.
Now, we've got a couple emails here. Marshall Spivak just said, "You guys are clowns, best wishes." That was the whole email. And then Paul Fudge just says, I must say I don't know that I have heard clowning. And then he still wants a t-shirt. But, yeah, so I put an informal poll out on Twitter. Or I guess I tried to make it a formal poll because I kindly requested that everyone votes. And it came back, I think it was even. It was 5-5 in terms of people who have heard clowning and used it or have not heard clowning and have not used it. So I need to get your take on this scenario. And do you believe that it's something that... Because it came up in the context of, in the middle of the Furman game, somebody would say, "We're clowning you." And maybe they wouldn't say that, but I do believe it's something that people do or have said in the past.
I completely agree. And I'm an old fella, so I'm kind of out of touch with some of these new...
With the hip young lingo.
Right, the hip young lingo, the vernacular of all you young folk. And I've heard this, and I've actually used it as part of my rhetoric.
Exactly.
Clowning. Yes.
Yeah, and they told me I should go back to Xbox Live.
I've even used it as clown shoes.
Clown shoes? Okay.
Yes. Like, that play was clown shoes.
I like it.
Yeah.
I might have to add that to the rotation.
Or I've called somebody clown shoes.
See, like, and I don't know where I first got it from, but it might have been, I was watching Coach Carter, and they was like, they swooped down and clowned you. And it was like, see, it's just something cool to say.
Right. It's like, you got did. You know, like somebody juked you, somebody made a play on you.
Whereby you looked like a clown at the end
right,
of it.
Right, exactly.
I don't understand.
It was funny, you were a clown, ha ha.
Anyway, now that we've got that out of the way, I think we can start the show up. All right, so we're going to head chronologically through the week in Florida football, and that means we'll start with Furman on Saturday. First of all, before we really get into it, I was shocked when Furman jumped out, as I think everybody else was, and... They blamed it after the game on all this, like, new formation that they hadn't seen on film before. Do you buy that that's an excuse at all? Like, that just seems stupid
no,
to me.
No, not at all. The fact that Muschamp used that as an excuse after the game was completely hilarious. I mean, essentially it was a wing T offense. This is what the majority of high school teams across the country run. If you can't stop that against an FCS opponent... There's something completely, fundamentally wrong with everything you're doing on defense. And it's not because Furman came up with this great scheme to beat you. It's because you're just not good.
Right. It wasn't exactly like an innovative offense.
No.
It was something, and it's something that they've all faced in high school before is the thing, like you mentioned. Because I just think it's like you see it one time and you're like, wow, we should do something different. And then you stop it the rest of the game because you're so much better.
Yeah.
And it just shocked me that just on a pure talent basis that they couldn't overwhelm the Furman, at least offensively. I mean, Furman's offense versus Florida's defense. I thought the talent gap would be much wider, and on Saturday it just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, you asked Sharif Floyd, all those cut blocks must have been getting to him.
Yeah, unbelievable. It's like that's like the magic, it's the magic bullet.
Yeah, you know? It's very funny to me that they would say that they could not stop Furman's scheme on offense. It's ridiculous. You've got an overmatched opponent at every single position across the board on the field, and you can't stop them.
Right.
Ronald Powell looked like an absolute fool when they were running that option his way. I mean, they continue to run right down Ronald Powell's throat. He bit on the option fake every single time, didn't pick up his man. It was bad, but it was funny.
Right. And then, Furman ran for 233 yards in the game, which is more than everybody except LSU, and that includes Alabama and Trent Richardson. So,
yeah,
to
that's
some extent,
ridiculous. And Muschamp, sorry, I don't mean to cut you
no,
off.
Go ahead,
Muschamp
go ahead.
After the game is saying, you take away the 177-yard run. They still ran for 160.
Right, yeah, you just let Furman run
for
160.
Which is more than most of the opponents, and that's Furman.
Right.
It's Furman.
It's unbelievable. So, but, I mean, when I look at that, the fact that you can compare it to everybody else Florida's played in Furman was more makes me think that they just came out and they just didn't care at all, right? Like, it's just a focus thing in terms of how they let all this happen.
No, it definitely is. I mean, I wrote that in my column today, actually, is that, you know, you could tell, like, Dominic Easley is usually the first guy out of the tunnel with a chain around his neck, you know, going crazy like he's jacked up on Mountain Dew. And this game, he, you know, was the last one out of the locker room. He walked to the sideline, and that was kind of, you know, the feel of the entire Gators team. After the first quarter when they were down, you know, Furman sprinted to the other end of the field. They were amped. They were ready to go. And Florida just kind of, like, walked towards Muschamp, like, oh, God, we're about to get chewed out, blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah.
And
you know what I mean?
I think Furman knew that with this scheme they were coming in with, they must have been excited. And I know that nobody had any attention to the Furman side of things, but their playoff appearance was on the line if they could have pulled out a win in this game. And since they didn't, they aren't going to the FCS playoffs.
But right. That tells you exactly all you need to know about how Florida, I mean, what this performance was like. I mean, Furman's lost to, coming off a loss to Elon. They've lost to Coastal Carolina, Wofford. Like,
right. It was bad. And I think you could tell from the – you couldn't tell before the game that Florida was going to have some troubles, but you could tell that they weren't into it. And the moment that I point to was after the, at the end of all their warm-ups, they do this thing where the last play they practice in their little walkthrough is a punt. And then the guy at, you know, midfield fair catches it, and everybody sprints out from the end zone, and they do their little thing in the center field, and then they head off for the game. And everybody, like, walked out there after the punt. You know, they just weren't into it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's got to be a product of the 5-5 start, I guess, would be what would doing that. Or do you see something else that would be?
I mean, it's a product of all of the things, I think. It's you know, frustration at being 5-5. You know, nobody in the stadium to even care that there's a game being played. It's Furman. It's their entire, you know, entitled attitude. That they just think, Muschamp even said it on Monday when he finally owned up to it, that, you know, there's players on this team that think that they can just walk out there and because they have a Gators emblem on their helmet that they're going to win, and that because they play for Florida that they're automatically good, and that they don't have to put in all the work that all these good teams like LSU and Alabama and, you know, every Stanford, all these other teams do to get to where they're at. You can't just, you know, be good because you're Alabama or be good because you're Florida.
Right, and you mentioned the crowd, and it was empty pretty much for most of the game, and that was something that rarely the players will acknowledge it, but Omar Hunter said after the game, like, he noticed that there wasn't a lot of people there, and I don't know, was that surprising to you at all? I think coming into it, we kind of had an idea it wasn't going to be quite the turnout we're used to.
I mean, I knew it was going to be bad, but I didn't think it was going to be that bad. Like, they said they announced the attendance at 84,000.
There's no way.
Yeah, and there's just absolutely no way. I don't even think they could have sold 84,000 tickets. I mean, you could have given away seats to that game, and people probably still wouldn't have come.
Right.
I've never seen, you know, the students, three entire sections of the student section completely empty. Like, if you put everybody on that side of the field into the, like, cram them all into sections so where there was no empty seats, you'd probably have the entire second tier of the student section
that.
Empty.
There were no full clumps.
No,
you know?
In the north end
always
zone, like, the top 10 rows, completely empty the entire side. It was really bad. I mean, I think Rachel is who it was that, yeah, it's like the spring game. It was silly. I mean, I've probably seen bigger crowds for spring games.
And the funny thing to me is that nobody watched it on TV either because it was a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So literally maybe 100,000 people saw what happened in that game, which, I mean, for Florida, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But, when you think about the crowd, would you expect trouble this weekend because is it a product of a bad team or for Florida State? They're going to fill it, right?
They're going to fill it. It's 7 p.m. game. It's Florida State. There's so many kids that are going to come here to see their Seminoles beat the tar out of the Gators in the Swamp, something that hasn't happened in 7 years, something that doesn't, you know, usually happen. It's going to be a historical moment probably for all those Seminole fans.
We'll get into that more in a little bit. I want to talk a couple more things about Furman before we move on. Furman's passing game wasn't bad either. They got 47 yards on the trick play with a throwback to the wide receiver, throw it downfield, which was, if there's one play I'll excuse Florida for, it's that one, because that was a little bit wild. But
sure, it was wild, but there's no excuse for Josh Evans to be, you know, 8 yards away from the line of scrimmage on that play.
Yeah.
When he's assigned for, you know, safety help on the wide receiver. It's just pathetic.
And then even so, Chris Forcier threw for 14 for 26 for 166 yards and a touchdown, which isn't a great day, but it's not a bad day either. And I don't know, was that a product of Marcus Roberson being out, or is it just more lack of focus, or is it, what did you see from the secondary?
The secondary, I mean, I saw Cody Riggs make a few plays, which was promising in Roberson's absence, but I think there was definitely a drop-off from that, from losing Marcus. He's going to be a great corner here, and I think a few of the guys said that after the game, is that they definitely felt not having Marcus there.
Yeah, that, I mean, he's an impact player because he's one of the bigger corners on the team, and he makes a difference. He has been their best corner all year, and without him, it's obviously going to be a little bit of a drop-off. But against Furman, you would think the next guy would still be better than anybody they can put out.
Exactly. I think it's going to be more a testament this Saturday when they have to go against a receiver like Greg Reed.
Just to wrap up the defense, we look at the statistics, and Jelani Jenkins had 10 tackles, and he finally caught an interception and took it back the distance. They were finally able to generate a couple of turnovers, and I mean, is that just a result of who they were playing? Because those are some bad throws that kind of just went right to the guys.
Yeah, the Jelani Jenkins interception, I didn't get to see. I was on the way down from the press box to the field. So
It was the running back was coming across, and it was just such a terrible overthrow. Okay. And it was just like right to him. It was unbelievable.
Well, he's had like six of those, and he couldn't capitalize.
Yeah, that's
so
fair. Saunders in the act again.
Yeah, good for Jelani. Saunders, his read wasn't that great. I mean, it was a good read, but it was a bad throw also. But, I mean, it's promising to see him have two interceptions in two games and – you know, finally the secondary is trying to make some plays back there, which is something they weren't doing in the beginning of the year.
Right, and then the only other thing that jumps out to me from the defensive box score is that Darren Kitchens had 12 tackles, and I know
four of those were on special teams.
Right, but even so, 8 tackles would have been second on the team just from a defensive standpoint. I mean, to be honest, this was a shock to me when I saw that this happened. I'm not sure that I particularly noticed, but
to put that in perspective, Josh Evans had 12 tackles or whatever it was against Vanderbilt.
Right. So if it comes to you, it could happen. You weren't too impressed by Mr. Kitchens,
no,
is it?
No. Yeah. There was never a time when I was like, oh, wow, Darren Kitchens.
Right.
You know, there wasn't like a moment where he stood out and made a play where I was like, oh, okay.
Exactly. And I guess, I mean, for all we know, they would have played nickel the whole game if they could have stopped the run, and he wouldn't have been out there anyway. So.
Right.
We'll see how that goes going forward. On the offensive end, it seemed like they did whatever they wanted, and I think that was, I don't know if that group was more focused or if they had even more of a mismatch, but somehow they were able to put up, John Brantley put up career numbers, 16-28, 329 yards, and 4 touchdowns. So,
I mean, I think that was where the biggest, you know, the most noticeable difference in the disparity of talent was there, because Andre DeBose just made their number one corner and their number one safety look absolutely foolish. You know, and that's something. I don't know why they leave him in single coverage. They're loading up the box against the run, obviously. But to leave Andre DeBose in single coverage twice was just silly.
And the funny thing about that was I thought their guys had, I mean, halfway decent coverage on the plays, and they just couldn't play the ball once it got up in the air. It was weird. But, I mean, Andre DeBose, 3 catches, 151, 2 touchdowns. It's a monster fantasy day for Andre DeBose, I'll say that. But, I mean, that's all we've seen him be so far this year is a deep threat. Do we think he can develop into more, or is that just his role for this team going forward into next year?
So much has been made of Andre DeBose that we kind of have to realize he's just a sophomore, albeit a redshirt sophomore, but he's got plenty of time to develop and be a fantastic wide receiver for this team. I mean, he's shown you, you know, something that you can't teach, really, is the ability to be a deep threat and beat people down the field. And it's not just Furman that he's done this to. He did that against Dre Kirkpatrick from Alabama, who's going to be a first-round draft pick at corner.
Right. You can't really teach that speed. But,
right.
I mean, are they going to find a way to get him in some routes and get him doing some
underneath stuff? I feel like this taste of success is going to be enough for him to maybe, like, get the light turned on, you know what I mean?
I could see that.
To where he can realize that, oh, wow, I can be this guy. But that's the problem is I'm not sure that there's guys on this team that have that mindset. I think that they're just kind of, like, you know, walking through life, going through the motions, enjoying being a popular football player at Florida instead of, you know, concentrating on achieving their goals and becoming a success in their future.
Right, that's fair because, I mean, we've seen from the wide receiver group and even the tight ends a little bit all year that there hasn't been a truly consistent threat and a guy that really scares some of the better defenses in. Against Furman, it doesn't matter because they had athletic mismatches all over the field and they got whatever they wanted for any of those guys. But,
right.
I mean, against better teams, it's just not going to work out that way. Last thing I want to touch on in the Furman game, I want to give a shout-out to Chris Rainey. I mean, he was playing on one ankle, and he really gutted it out with 90 yards. So, I mean, I thought that was a good showing from him. You were equally impressed, I think?
No, yeah, for sure. You talked about this on Monday when we were going through our Sunday, when we were going through our Swamp Suds votes. And I agree. I mean, I looked back, and I was looking through my play-by-play that I keep yesterday, and Rainey got hurt on the first series of the game. He came in hurt. And then he went down on the first series of the game and stayed down for several minutes and had to be looked at. Did as usual, go to the trainer's table, get retaped, test out the ankle, stand over there, and then force his way back into the game. And he had, I think there was a 39-yard run just straight through the middle where he looked like a bullet coming out through the hole. So, I mean, Rainey deserves all of the respect, anything you want to give him for his on-field play this year.
Right, and I was surprised that, given his injury, that they didn't go to Dempsmore. And, I mean, maybe is he still banged up? What did you think that they kept riding Rainey even though he wasn't healthy?
Hold on to the ball.
Oh, yeah. He does have a couple fumbles so far.
He's fumbled. He hasn't lost a fumble, but I think he's put the ball on the ground in three straight games.
Right, and he had one. He didn't have a ton of carries against Furman. I can pull up the number, but he did fumble one that I remember where they – I mean, that would have been a costly turnover, too, because they did not show an ability to stop Furman defensively. And
he fumbled against Vanderbilt, and after he fumbled against Vanderbilt, I think he got two carries for the rest of the game.
Right. Demps had eight carries in the game on Saturday, so, yeah, and he fumbled one of them. So that's not something that coaches are going to be happy about. And I guess it continues to say something about Gillislee if, you know, Rainey's hurt, Demps can't hold on to the ball, and he still doesn't play.
Yeah.
But we'll see if they can find a role for him going forward.
Well, I think another thing with the Gillislee thing is if he was struggling with pass protection in their base offense when they had to switch and go to the pistol, I think that's even going to throw a bigger wrench in that for Gillislee.
Yeah, that's entirely fair. Talking about Demps, one thing that kind of came up in media today or through this week was kind of his future after football. And there's obviously he's been a successful track athlete. He's won a national championship in the 100-meter, I believe. And, I mean, obviously he's a fast guy, but there's been some talk about maybe he ends up in the NFL, maybe he gets drafted, maybe he gets drafted and decides to go to track because it's more lucrative for him. If you had to speculate on Jeff Demps' future, what would you imagine he would end up doing?
I imagine I don't know. I mean, I feel like he has potential to be drafted.
Just because he's so fast?
Yeah, but there's plenty of guys that are fast as hell and don't get drafted.
Right. There's a guy that I had a thing on Twitter yesterday where
I saw this.
It's like Noel Devine was an outstanding player, and he's as fast as anybody. And he's Jeff Demps-like and Chris Rainey and better.
That's a great comparison.
And he's not on a team. It's not even like he was an undrafted free agent pickup. He just isn't on a team.
I want to know what his measurables are and what the deal was with that. I know he suffered injury his junior year and whatnot, but you've also got guys like Steve Slayton, C.J. Spiller, Dexter McCluster, Darren Sproles that are, you know, carving out niches in the NFL to where I can see a guy like Jeff Demps making a roster. He's not going to be a top 3-round pick.
Right.
Oh, I don't think he'll go in the first 5 rounds. I think he'll be a 6th or 7th round, probably a undrafted free agent signing, most likely.
I think
he's going to have to prove himself. I mean, when the knock on you right now is that you can't hold on to the ball, you can't stay healthy. He's never had more than 100 carries in one season of his college football career. He's never gone over 1,000 yards. Sure, he averages 7 yards a carry, but, I mean, he's not going to be an every-down player. He's not going to be this. He's just going to be kind of like a third-down back, a package guy. So it's not something you can spend a high draft pick on. And honestly, I think that's kind of the same story for his track career. I don't believe that he's got the speed to be the fastest guy in college football, but he doesn't have the speed to compete with Usain Bolt.
Right. Well, the thing that I think about, I've heard people say about this, and I think there might be some legitimacy to it, is that he's trying to maintain a certain football weight, and that in terms of being a pure sprinter, he could even improve on what he is now.
Certainly.
You know, you get him out of the pads, you trim down a little bit because he's probably tried to bulk up a little bit just to
he be ran his best SEC. One of, if not his, yeah, actually his best official 100-meter time when he was a sophomore.
Right.
So I definitely buy into that, but it's also he can compete on the track level. But I don't know the specifics of the money and the differences there. I don't know how lucrative that is. You know, obviously he's going to get most of his money from signing an endorsement deal, a sponsorship deal. But I don't know. Right.
I mean, if he goes out to the combine and he runs like a 4.19, then I think somebody will take him. But other than that, just between the fumbles that we just talked about, and you know, haven't seen him as a great running back, more than just a speed guy and a kick returner.
And he's kind of one dimensional as a back because he doesn't offer you much as a pass catcher out of the backfield.
Right, and that's such a big thing with those little guys. And he's not a great.
That's
why
Darren Sproles is so good. That's why McCluster is so good. That's why these guys get on the field, is because they can be, you know, put in the backfield, option out into the slot, and mismatch on a linebacker and create plays in space.
But above all, even all of that stuff, I think the biggest thing that's going to hold him back is the injuries. Because you see a guy like Arian Foster, who's just tearing up the NFL right now, goes undrafted because he couldn't stay healthy in college. Like, they just don't trust those guys who have the nagging injuries and can't stay on the field. And Dempsey's definitely one of those, but I'd say regardless, his chances are better than Deontay Thompson, which is something that.
Before we get to Deontay, what do you think about Chris Rainey's NFL prospects? Because I think they're around the same, if not worse, than Dempsey, which is surprising, honestly.
I think Rainey's offers more as a pass catcher, and he's more in the mold of some of the guys we were talking about that are doing it successfully in the NFL right now. But I don't think he blocks either. I don't think he's shown an ability to stay healthy, and I don't think he's... I mean, he certainly has more moves and more quickness and more agility and is a better running back than Jeff Demps, in my opinion. But it'd be tough because I don't think he's as fast as Demps when they get him in the 40 time. So.
Right, he's been caught a couple times this year.
We'll have to see how that works out. And I do think a lot of it's going to be on their combine stuff in terms of what they weigh in at, if they can show anything strength-wise, and just how they really want to see
what Chris Rainey weighs at the combine, because it's got to be like 150 pounds.
Right, and then they're going to say there's just no way this guy.
Right, exactly. Plus, he freestyles too much on the field and off the field.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he is.
I mean, people, like, he seems like he's been pretty well. He's going to be under control this year, but people are going to remember the arrest and things like that, and they're going to get him in an interview setting, and he's going to be Chris Rainey. And
exactly.
None of these things are going to help his chances, that's for sure. But yeah, Deontay, this seems pretty stupid.
I don't understand why anybody's even talking about this. I don't understand why he's going to go work out with somebody. I don't understand why anybody would even ask him the question.
Right. It's like he...
Muschamp said he's got speed. No, he doesn't.
He's pretty fast.
I don't even think he's that fast.
He's behind Demps, Rainey, and DeBose, you think? But that's... he might not even be near the fastest guy in this team, but...
No, I don't even think he's in the top five.
Wow. And then, okay, you look at it this year, he's got 19
catches.
He's got 19 catches for 237 yards, and he can't hold on to the ball.
Right.
And all the talk is, like, special teams, and news to me that he was on special teams. I've seen one or two good blocks. I remember he laid somebody out one time, and I was shocked. But other than that,
he's tough in traffic, and that he's physical as a wide receiver.
Yeah, he can't even.
We're talking about
Deontay
Thompson.
This is the bum group that they have out there. He can't even get on the field more than a couple snaps. You know, because if you're splitting time with Quentin Dunbar, you're not going to the NFL.
The thing, he's still riding on his high school rivals rating is what I think.
Like, and it's, a lot of guys ride that very far, but he's not even. He was number 8 wide receiver, number 49 overall recruit, I believe, and that's not enough to... Like, there's guys who are number 1, and then they do nothing in college, and then they end up getting drafted on that stuff, but when you're number 8 and number 49, that's not good enough.
And his measurables aren't that impressive either. I think he's probably listed at, what, 6'1", 190 or something like that?
I will pull it up, but yeah.
When he shows up in practice, or to media sessions, he's tiny.
Yeah, he's not. And then, it's
6'200", they have him listed at. And that's just not
accurate. There's no way. And that's another guy, you get him in the combine, you actually get his weight, and then you say he's not going to hold up.
He's 5'10", 185, and he runs a 4.6.
If he even gets invited to the combine.
Right, he's not going to get invited to the combine.
Like, it's just...
He's not.
I don't know.
He's not.
It's really wishful thinking to think he's even got a shot at that, but it seems like the consensus, at least around the media group, is that, hey, it could happen, and I don't buy it at all.
Right, like, I would rather have Cecil Shorts III on my team than Deontay Thompson.
Right, I mean, and then, you know, we talked about Noel Devon. There's a lot of fine receivers that go undrafted every year, like a guy like Terrence Tolliver at LSU, and it's a completely different player from Deontay, but just your ability to play football, it's not even close to for those two, so. Yeah, and, I mean, another thing that's kind of a topic was the overall, why Deontay and Brantley never became what they were meant to be, and they were both very highly recruited guys, came in as freshmen together, and they were supposed to be the next great pass-catching combo, and it just never worked out. Is there something more to it than they're just not that good? Or, I mean, what do you see in terms of why that never materialized?
Well, for Deontay, it's because he's not that good.
Right.
For Brantley, it's a lot of reasons. Deontay said something yesterday which was funny to me. He was asked if how John Brantley's going to be remembered and whatnot, and why his legacy isn't better. And he said he did the best with what he had. And what he had was you, Deontay.
Right, right. And he had a couple years on the bench.
Right,
and he had,
right. Yeah. I mean, John Brantley kind of got a raw deal last year, as I think Urban Meyer had already checked out. You know, he wasn't doing much with the offense. And they're running Trey Burton and Jordan Reed out there and trying to run a spread option offense with John Brantley. That just wasn't going to work. So, and then this year he's got his third different offensive coordinator in 3 years, running his second offense, and still no talent.
That's
no offensive
factor.
Line.
That's something Deontay said was a factor for both of them, too, that having to change coaches and change schemes so often. But
yeah, for sure, that plays into it. But when you've got Matt Patchen and Xavier Nixon as your bookend tackles,
right.
You know, you suffer a bunch of injuries. I think John Brantley could have had a very, very good senior season. I feel like if he doesn't get injured against Alabama, they make that a respectable game. They're not going to win it.
Right.
They make that a respectable game. They probably beat Auburn. They probably beat Georgia. And they're sitting here with a respectable season. Nobody's, you know, talking all this negative stuff about the Gators and John Brantley and his legacy and all that.
Very, very possible, very possible. A couple other guys, because obviously it's senior day this weekend, and we've talked about Brantley and Demps and Rainey and Thompson, but a couple other guys you've talked to and you've written about this week are Dan Wenger and James Wilson. So why don't you take me through a little bit what's going on with them, their stories to this point, and what their senior day experience figures to be like.
Well, Mr. Wenger is an interesting story because he's a six-year senior. And this is his third senior day, so his parents have been out there on the field. They're gonna, they've been through this.
I mean, they probably should just not even show up at this point, or send me an uncle, or give somebody else a crack at this thing.
But there is a sense of finality because there is no other, you know, there's not going to be another one for him. There's not going to be a seventh year of eligibility. There just isn't. And his football career after this doesn't look very bright. He's already talked about wanting to become a coach, becoming a graduate assistant, being a strength coach, etc.
And his, I believe it's his brother or his uncle or somebody, some
relation.
His brother is a coach at
St. Thomas. Yeah,
is the strength coach there? So I mean, it's
he's
in,
also
it's in
assistant,
the family a little
assistant
bit.
Head coach.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's in the family. I feel like he would be good at that.
Seems like a nice guy, pretty personable.
Right, right. He's a good fella.
I think he lifts weights every once in a while. I don't know. Get that vibe.
But yeah, I mean, he's battled through a lot, so I'm happy for him, and he brought a lot to this offensive line this year, so he deserves the recognition on senior day, whereas a guy like Moses Jenkins probably doesn't.
Oh, every week we got the Moses Jenkins hate.
But James Wilson is another guy that his career has just been ravaged by injuries, and you know, he came in as, I think, the number four overall offensive lineman.
Sounds about right.
I want to say.
I don't know for sure, but
yeah, he was very, very highly rated. And, I mean, he just didn't see the field. He couldn't do it. He had knee problems. He had this. He had that.
Broke his feet or something like that?
Yeah. And he was very happy to be interviewed. I think he was very happy to be interviewed yesterday and very happy that Franz, you know, gave him a compliment, said he played well when he was out there.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was asking him a question, but
I thought he was too, but James Wilson took it as a compliment and said, thank you. Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
I mean,
I'm glad somebody notices.
As long as you know about James Wilson.
James Wilson is a heck of a guy. He's from Jacksonville. He's a hometown boy
for
me.
Oh, okay. So that's great.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good guy. I've hung out with him a couple times. He's a very nice fella. And I was happy for him to get in the game and actually make an impact in his senior season against Furman. I'm not sure that he'll play Saturday against Florida State unless Xavier Nixon or Kyle Coney or Harrison or somebody can't go or Winger.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy for him. He deserves to be sent out on a high note.
All right, and that transitions us nicely into Florida State. And it seems like every game this season where Florida's played bad, it's the next week I thought they were going to lose badly. And you look at, like, coming into the Auburn game, I thought Auburn was going to blow them out, and then it didn't happen. And then coming into the Georgia game, I thought Georgia was going to blow them out. And, you know, Aaron Murray was really bad, and it didn't happen. And I just have a feeling it's going to be kind of the same thing this week where we see Florida struggle against Furman, and you say, hey, they're playing FSU, and they're probably going to get blown out, and then all of a sudden you see FSU on the field, and they're not that good either, because if you watched FSU last week, they almost lost to, or they did lose to Virginia.
They did lose to Virginia.
It was a wild ending to that game. There was like the clock almost ran out because they threw a pass. It was first and five or something like that, and they were on about the 35-yard line. And they wanted to get a little bit closer for a field goal, and there's maybe 30 seconds left and no timeouts. So what they do is they throw a 4-yard pass and get tackled in bounds, and time runs out because they couldn't stop the clock with the first down, and they couldn't spike it because it was fourth down at that point or something like that weird that happened. And then they wound up reviewing it, and they had to put the time on the clock because it turned out it was actually an incomplete pass. So then they got an extra play, and it turned out, and then the guy missed the field goal anyway. It was just a wild ending to that game. So they're not coming in on the high note either. So I just feel like we're going to expect Florida to be bad, and then there's a chance Florida State will be worse, and the game could go either way.
I agree. I really wholeheartedly agree. And that's why I'm the only one in the picks column to pick Florida.
I thought about it for a while. My gut is Florida, but I just couldn't go with it.
I just have a feeling. I just have this feeling in the pit of my stomach. I haven't had a feeling like this all season. I think Florida's going to win the game. I feel like they're going to make a play on special teams, whether it be a blocked kick or a return for a touchdown, like they did against Georgia, that's going to put them ahead. But this time they're going to be able to hold on. What worries me is Florida State's ability to run the ball.
Yeah.
Because if they can establish a ground game, get a lead early, it's probably going to be a long day for Florida.
Well, here's the thing I look at. I pulled up a couple of stats for this, and Florida State's rush offense is number 86 nationally, and I would have expected better. That was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one of their good running backs went down with injury, but I thought they had like a stable of running backs.
Yeah, it's been kind of a rotation from what I've seen at the stats, that they've worked in a couple different guys. And another thing with the running game is that E.J. Manuel is more of a mobile guy, and Florida hasn't faced a ton of mobile quarterbacks this year, but the one that sticks out was Jordan Rodgers, and they really struggled with that. I mean,
Connor Shaw?
Yeah, true. Oh, yeah, true. I mean, he hasn't really counted as a quarterback because he can't throw.
Right. But you've got that option as run and pass, I mean, I think that's going to give them fits.
Do you think there's something they can scheme up to try to deal with it, or is it just not match up good with what they want to do personnel-wise?
I think getting Laurente McCray back is going to help.
If they get him back,
yeah. Right. That should help. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think you can do scheme against that. I think you just got to be sound in your technique and sound in your responsibilities and sound in your assignments, which is something that they haven't been consistently for one game all year. So I think that has to be the focus this week. I think they have to just have been drilled into their head, stay in your gaps, stay on your assignment. And I think they need to assign a spy on the quarterback, especially on some, like, third down plays.
Wouldn't be the worst decision.
Right. And then Jelani Jenkins said they didn't do that at all against South Carolina, against Connor Shaw, which is...
Yeah, which seems silly because you know that really guy's going to... I think Bostic or Jenkins could fill that role just fine because they're solid players. They can find the ball and go to it, or at least let it come to them. And
I'd be interested to put Ronald Powell in that situation.
Just because he's an athlete?
He's the best runner of the three linebackers. I just feel he's too dumb to get it. I'm sorry, Ronald Powell, if you're listening, or people that like Ronald Powell. You're just dumb. I mean...
Yikes. Okay.
But the problem for Florida is really going to be is keeping the game close. Because if they get behind, it's going to be a long day. Florida State has one of the best front sevens, and you can even call it a front eight in all of college football. Yeah. And they average 3 sacks per game.
And then a lot of that is a guy, Brandon Jenkins, I think he has 7 sacks this year, and he's projected as kind of a first-round pick when you look at some of the NFL stuff as a kind of a hybrid outside linebacker in a 3-4 thing. And he's just, I mean, when you look at that kind of a matchup with Florida's offensive tackle,
and that's
not good.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem because Florida's offensive line has struggled with stunts and zone blitzes all season. And when you have a guy like that at your second level, as good of a blitzer as he is, it's going to pose some problems for that offensive line picking up in the projections.
Right.
You just can't get behind against that team and allow them to pin their ears back and pressure John Brantley, because Florida's passing game is not going to be able to do what they did against Furman against Florida State and carry the game.
I think to some extent they're going to have to try, though. I think it's going to have to be like what they did against Alabama, because Florida State's rush defense is number 3 in the nation, and their pass defense is number 30. That's not a bad pass defense by any measure, but trying to run against Nigel Bradham, I believe his name, and, you know, just that front is just not, I don't think that they're going to have much success there.
Especially with Dempsey Rainey. I mean,
right.
If you had a power back and you could, you know, ground it out, sure, you might be able to have an effective running game, but I don't see it with Dempsey Rainey. Especially Brantley can't get back under center this week.
Right, and you don't know for sure, you know, how healthy either of those two guys are, especially with Rainey's ankle. And, I mean, we've just talked about how Rainey's clearly the best running back on this team. Losing him would be huge, especially because it's important to try to get the run game going. And they've had some success when they can spread it out, but it'll be tougher this week with, you know, against a good pass rush.
It sounded like Charlie Weiss, was he confident last night talking about the run game?
I mean, his kind of stance has been, I don't like anything, and the fact that we're bad means that we're bad in pretty much all areas.
Yeah.
But I think, I felt from a health standpoint, he wasn't really worried about them. I mean, all year he's been pretty high on Dempsey Rainey and what they can do from a speed standpoint, and if you can get them to ball, they can make plays and things of that nature. But I think overall he understands that they're not doing too well, and he is not entirely pleased with what he's seen from any area of this offense.
I'd like to see Hunter Joyer get double-digit carries in this game.
I'd like to see him play like every snap is more right. Anything than that. Just right. Like, I don't need to see
Brantley. Brantley didn't have socks on this Monday in the press conference. The point being, he was wearing tennis shoes. He was going about his normal life to where the ankle injury didn't look like it was bothering him in the slightest.
Gotcha.
Okay? So I feel like if he can get under center, you can use Hunter Joyer in the I formation and have him on the field for the majority of your offensive snaps. That is going to be extremely key on Saturday against Florida State because he's punishing as a lead blocker, and he's your best power runner that you have as a back. I think Hunter Joyer is the key to Florida having any success on offense on Saturday.
Right, and I mean, you can try to match power with power, and another reason you have to try to do that is because I don't think Florida's pass game is going to be able to get much going as much as they're going to want to try. Like we said, Florida State's been okay against the pass, pretty good, and they have a guy in Xavier Rhodes who's their top corner, and he's been good all year, and Florida's receivers, man. It's like we talk about every week. They're just not that good. And I don't know. Maybe you can get a couple deep balls and it opens up the running game. But overall, you're not going to – it's going to be tough to
– Another thing that's going to hurt them is Jordan Reed if he can't go.
Right. I wasn't even thinking about that. He's been – when they do kind of do – I feel like I've been contradicting myself slightly because they have been – they have had some success with the spread stuff. But at the same time, they're going to have trouble getting the pass going. I think a big reason that they would struggle this weekend would be without Jordan Reed because he's been instrumental when they go to some of their spread looks. Just being able to be a presence over the middle and a guy that creates mismatches against linebackers and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, he actually leads the team in receptions. He's been probably their most consistent pass catcher throughout the season, and he missed a couple games with injury, and he got injured against Furman. He was on crutches on Monday, hobbling around campus. So who knows if he can go. And that's going to be a real, real issue because they love to run two tight end sets. And without him on the field, who are you going to run? A.C. Leonard and William Steinman?
Right. They don't have a third tight end.
Right. There's not a third tight end. Amarius Fumble Hines.
Yeah,
like
losing Gerald Christian was bigger than I think a lot of people made it out to be. Especially because he's the true blocking tight end.
Yeah. He was a beast in that blocking role. I mean, I'm not trying to knock A.C. Leonard because he's actually made – he's come right. on and he's made some nice plays
recently.
He is
recently. More of a pass catcher than
– Right, exactly. He's more of a pass catcher. He's a big guy, but he's more of a pass catcher than a blocker. And when you have just Leonard in there as opposed to Leonard and Reed or Reed and somebody else, I just think it's a big drop-off.
Right. And then the kind of the last thing I want to talk about in terms of this matchup is – going back to when Florida State has the ball, they're wide receivers. They have guys like Rashad Green, Burt Reed's a name that stands out, and then Rodney Smith and Kenny Shaw both have had, you know, 30 catches this season. And Florida, again, without Roberson, I don't know how well they're going to match up. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's an issue for me as well because I'm not positive, but I believe a couple of those guys are large receivers.
Yeah. I know Green is.
Yeah, which is something that Florida has completely struggled with this year. Tavares King. Reuben Randall, not so much Alshon Jeffrey because they didn't even try, but
yeah.
Jordan Matthews from Vanderbilt. All of these guys are 6'2" or taller, and with they struggled against those guys with Roberson in the game.
Right.
Without Roberson, I don't know.
And Watkins is is a bigger guy compared to the rest of their corners, but Riggs especially is not one of the larger players on that team.
He's 5'8", and that's generous.
Yeah, it is. I like that. It's a generous 5'8" when you look at Cody
Riggs.
I
like Cody Riggs, and I like the way he plays, but against a tall receiver like that, you're just at a severe disadvantage.
So we could wrap up kind of the Florida State preview if you want to give us your prediction. You hinted at it a little bit before, but you want to throw a score on that, and we'll see what we got.
Yeah, for a score, let me go ahead and do 27-22 Florida.
Okay. I mean, like I said, I could see it. Is it? Now, here's my question. Is it against the rules to make a pick in the picks column and then when you're on the podcast say the opposite thing? Would I get in trouble for that?
I don't think so, because I feel like the picks column is more based on the spread, not necessarily who you believe is going to win the game.
I guess.
And it's also like a competitive thing, and you're trying to maintain your position.
That's true.
So whether you think what's going to happen and whether you... go ahead.
I would like to take Florida, and I would like to take,
well.
I would like to take Florida 21-17.
Okay.
It's just a gut thing. It's not... There's no... I just think... There's actually some people on this team who believe that if they beat Florida State, it kind of redeems everything that's gone wrong this season. And I think that's something in their minds that's worth playing for. And I could see them getting up for this game. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to see how they look pregame, how they come out. Like, I mean, sure, the stuff doesn't mean that much, but it does. You know, it does.
Right. I mean, the rivalry game is big. You know, I think that some people overrate it, some people underrate it. But I do think it is a big factor in terms of maybe not to recruiting, because recruits want to go where they can play, and that's something we've talked about. But, you know, just for a must-chance to get off to a good start against Florida State and for these guys to beat the team that some of them grew up rooting for, a lot of them grew up hating, and just that kind of the emotions that go into that game, I think it is a pretty big factor in what goes on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's a primetime game against your biggest rival with sending, you know, some key pieces out of the program. You're sending Dan Winger. Jeff Demps, Chris Rainey, John Bradley, Deontay Thompson. Four guys that have been talked about for a long time here. I feel like if there is a growing up moment for these younger guys, it has to be this Saturday. And I feel like this will tell us a lot about what to expect next year.
Right. And, I mean, the emotions of senior day, I mean, it honestly does change things in terms of, and I do think that Florida State is the better team, but it's hard to say what's going to happen once they get out there. Anyway, I guess we can move into Gators in the NFL now. We're coming at you on a Wednesday, but still worth touching on some of the things that happened over the weekend quickly.
Some very interesting things happening for
Gators. Yeah, it was actually, and we're not going to talk about Tebow, because I don't know if you heard, but we went hard on Tebow over the weekend.
No, I did not.
We had Kyle and Mr. Booth on in the intro. We talked a lot about Tim Tebow, so
okay.
We're not going to beat that dead horse any farther, but Major Wright had an interception again, so good for him, and the reason I wanted to get that out of the way is because a lot of the other Gators in the NFL were wide receivers who really, really did some big things this weekend.
Yeah.
Andre Caldwell got the start, and he had three receptions for 63 yards and a touchdown, as they put on a respectable effort against the Ravens, Cincinnati Bengals, that is, with A.J. Green out. I know Percy Harvin had six catches for 73 yards and a touchdown. He also ran five times for 21 yards. And actually, I want to just touch on that real quick. I think it's cool the way they use him, because he does play some, like, traditional running back where they just throw him in the I form and they give him the ball. And, you know, you have a playmaker like Percy Harvin, and he's a guy that was a hybrid wide receiver running back here. I think it's interesting the way that they use him in that offense.
I'd love to have a guy like Percy Harvin on the Jaguars. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just one guy like that. Just one playmaker on offense would be fun.
It just opens up everything for so many other people. And I think
Percy is just, I mean, I think everybody knows how great he was at Florida. I think he was more the more important part of their two national championships than Tim Tebow. I'll say that.
That's an interesting stance. I mean, didn't he score a touchdown in some like ridiculous streak of games that was like just like every freaking game he scored a touchdown?
He was just a physical anomaly in college football. It was just absolutely silly the way that he ran, the way that he cut at full speed. He made every single opponent every single week look foolish.
Andre DeBose, man.
No.
It's supposed to be the next Percy Harvin.
There's
only one Percy Harvin,
right.
I think.
Can never, ever make any comparisons to that man. I'm sorry, you just can't.
That's fair. another guy we have, unusual Gator in the NFL, shout out to Riley Cooper, who got his first career start at wide receiver. had 5 catches for 75 yards, and he caught the game-winning touchdown against the Giants in a primetime game, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Good for Mr. Longhair, don't care.
He's always been a good blocker, and that's something that people shout him out for, but he's a fast guy with some length to him.
He was always a good deep threat at Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're just loaded at receiver at Philadelphia when you can have Riley Cooper come in and start because DeShaun Jackson's a punk and a bum and Jeremy Maclin's out. Man. Yeah.
Andre DeBose look alike, Jeremy Maclin. and also one last wide receiver, Jabbar Gaffney started. He had 7 catches for 115 yards, and he scored 2. So Gator wide receivers in the NFL doing big things this week. And, I mean, those passes were coming from Rex Grossman, who now has his starting job back and completed 25 of 38 passes for 289 yards.
And he almost beat the Cowboys single-handedly.
Yeah, he had 2 touchdowns, and he only had 1 interception, which is not a very Rex Grossman stat line.
Right. Right.
Normally expect 3 or 4 on 38.
He made some really good plays. He threw a touchdown right at the end of the half. That was big. He ran for a touchdown. He had a very non-Grossman day.
Right. And my roommate is a Redskins fan, so we watched this game a little bit, and we talk about Rex Grossman versus John Beck all the time. And I've always felt like if I was a coach of a team, I could never have Rex Grossman start on that team just because there's some games he's going to win you, and there's other games where he's just literally going to throw it away.
Right. You can't. It's been proven that you can't coach it out of him.
Right. And it's like, you're basically saying, like, we're going to put whether we win or lose in Rex Grossman's hands. I never would want to do that. Like, a guy like John Beck is not going to take any chances. He's not going to make any throws. But if you're the better team, you'll win the game because he won't blow it for you.
This is exactly why I've, like, started a campaign to try and discredit Peyton Manning's career.
What?
Yeah. Peyton Manning, sure, he's a great quarterback in a regular season format. If you need to go win a game in week 6, Peyton Manning's your guy. But he has 1 Super Bowl. He didn't win a national championship.
Oh, come on.
He's got 1 Super Bowl, and you know who he beat in that Super Bowl? Rex Grossman.
Rex Grossman, that's fair.
Yeah.
He did not play.
In the rain. Rex Grossman in the rain.
He was the MVP of that game and did not play particularly well, I remember. So, I mean,
like, I'm not trying to take quarterbacks.
Right.
He's never been a big game, crunch time, fourth quarter quarterback.
He's played well in regular season big games, but he's never been a playoff guy.
Never. Never been a big game. To me, any regular season game is not that much of a big game. Playoffs,
I still think he's one of the all-time greats. It's hard to argue otherwise.
To me, he's Dan Marino.
Right, but Dan Marino's one of the all-time greats.
Sure, he's an all-time great thrower of the football.
All right, I mean... Completely different discussion, and that's your opinion.
I'd rather have Ben Roethlisberger than Peyton Manning. I'll put it that way. Ben Roethlisberger,
that's crazy to me,
in the fourth quarter is going to make a play to win you the game.
That's out of control.
How many rings does Ben Roethlisberger have?
More than Peyton Manning. I mean, listen.
2. More than Peyton Manning. And doesn't have anywhere near the skill set.
Yeah, okay, well, you just said it right there. He's not as good.
I don't care. I want the winner. Give me the winner.
You don't think if Peyton Manning had the Steelers defense, they would have won more?
You're trying to say the Colts defense wasn't good when they won the Super Bowl?
It wasn't great.
It surely wasn't the Steelers defense.
Couldn't stop the run. Never have been able to. Anyway, we're way off tangent. Let's bring it back. But that does it. Oh no, you know what? I can't wrap up Gators in the NFL without you just saying something about Jeremy Mincy, or else you'll get all mad. So
he had an okay game.
He had 5 tackles, I think I just saw.
He had an okay game. So.
Okay, we've mentioned him. It's fair to move on.
Reggie Nelson's bad. Go ahead. Right. Now we're good.
All right. Now we're set. And Joe Hayden's really good. Now we're set for the week.
I did want to talk about Joe Hayden, honestly.
I forgot you guys got to play against Joe Hayden.
Joe Hayden is, to me, if not top 3, most definitively top 5 corner in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you were here when we mentioned this last, but... I saw rankings on ESPN.com from one of the Scouts Inc. guys, and he had him as the 2nd best cornerback behind Revis. And I haven't watched enough Browns football to be able to comment on this, but it wouldn't be shocking based on what we know about Joe Hayden.
He made a play to save the game for them. I mean, 3 plays after he got called for a pass interference that almost lost them the game. I mean, that was...
Can't win them all.
Right, that was kind of the game for Joe Hayden. It was a mixed bag. He got called on a couple pass interference penalties. He got beat on a double move by Jason Hill,
yikes,
people, for a large gain. But then he also made some outstanding plays that you don't see anybody else make in the league. And he made the breakup on the second and goal play from the 1 yard line to the fade to Jason Hill to save the game.
He had four tackles and he defended three passes. You don't usually see three passes defended in a stat line. That's a lot.
Right. He's going to develop into probably right behind Revis. I don't know who you could put above him right now.
Right.
I mean, I'm interested to see how Patrick Peterson develops as a corner.
Right.
But I'm not sure
he's... Pretty good return, man.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm not sure he's that much of a great cover corner. So, I think it's Revis. I might say Champ Bailey just right now.
Champ Bailey's still living. He's still living.
And when he was out, Denver's defense gave up just passing yard or passing yard or passing yard. When he came back, I mean, the defense has been completely different. So
right. I'm trying to think around the league. Guys like Leanne Hall are good, and like Asamoah is still really good if you put him in the right scheme.
Asamoah is just not physical. He's not. I mean, he's just a decent cover guy. Joe Hayden, for who he is, he'll punch you in the mouth. He'll get in there. He's physical. He'll pull your hands down. He'll do what it takes to make the play. I think Nnamdi is not that type of guy.
Ike Taylor isn't as good as Joe Hayden. No. None of the Ravens guys. I'm just trying to think through some of the good teams. Maybe the Packers guys are close, but yeah, Joe Hayden.
I mean,
Woodson
gets some love, but I mean, I think you got to give it Hayden.
It's fair. All right, I guess we're about ready to wrap it up. We got our Gator guarantees. Normally, we get Watts to do his awards, so we don't have to hear about golf anymore because we got him in for a hybrid preview / recap show. So we're going to spin it forward with the Gator guarantees. What do you have for us this week?
10 catches, 150 yards, and 2 touchdowns from wide receivers.
I mean, Florida wide receivers?
Yes. Yes.
Which ones?
I'm not willing to say.
See,
but there will be 10 catches, more than 150 yards, and 2 touchdowns from Florida wide receivers in this game.
The most interesting thing about this to me is that when you say 150 yards on 10 catches, normally they can get 150 yards on like
three catches,
they're going to get.
Right.
But 10 catches, huh?
Yes.
Some possession stuff there. All right.
I mean, I feel like they're going to come out and throw the ball on first down. I think it's just something they have not done much of all season.
That's fair. I mean, we talked about how the run game isn't a great matchup for them, and they might have to do some different things.
They're going to come out like they did against Alabama. They're going to spread the field. They're going to put four wide receivers out there, and they're going to hit checkdowns. They're going to hit crossing routes underneath, and they're going to do what they need to do to move the ball down the field.
That's fair. And mine, I have that I think the Gators will force four turnovers in this game.
Wow.
Four. And it's not a knock on Florida State and the things they
They've only done
do
that
offensively.
Once this year.
Well, I think this is going to be... Listen, I go bold with the Gator guarantees. They've only done it once this year, and I think that... I mean, it's just... It's about time that they really start... Because they started to get it together a little bit against Furman, and I know it's because it's Furman, but apparently they come in bunches, and if they can carry it over this week, I think that's going to be a big factor in their being able to pull off. I guess it's an upset. And
right.
I think... We kind of talked about how, on a matchup basis, Florida State looks pretty good. But when you factor in all the things like the emotions and the senior day and the desire to redeem the season, I think that'll show itself in things like turnovers, where it's effort plays ripping the ball out or diving to make a pick and getting pressure and it forces bad decisions. And maybe the crowd's into it because they know it's their last chance
block
to come
kick
out
too. They've blocked 5 kicks this year. Dominic Easley got one last week.
I think
week.
There's stuff like that that can really turn the game for them, and that's why I'm going with that.
I mean, they're going to need something like that to win the game. Okay. So,
all right, well, I guess that about wraps it up for this week. You can send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. We will be back probably Monday. It's going to be interesting from here because the football media schedule drastically changes once the season ends, and then we have to figure out what's going on with the bowl game. And
there's no media schedule.
Right. And then we're going to have some basketball talk, obviously, but we'll be in here on Monday to do that. We're going to break for Thanksgiving a little bit. That's why we're coming out with this one earlier. But, and if you want to keep up with us over the break, you can find me at Greg Luca. You can obviously find all of us at Alligator Sports. You can find Matt, you tell him where.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm there. I don't tweet much, but I'm there. It's quality, not quantity.
I agree with that completely.
At WattMats, WattMatts. Quality, not quantity.
Don't be afraid to follow us. We're not going to blow up your feeds with a lot of stupid stuff.
Yeah, right. If we tweet, it's going to be
don't follow Tom. That's a mistake. But yeah. You can follow us. We're going to keep it clean. Real to the point.
Unless you don't like Jaguars, just avoid my feed on Sundays between 1 and 4 because spewing hate. But
I tried to tone down the Dolphins tweets this weekend. I kept it to just one. Normally I'll get a couple out there.
Yeah, me too. I left it to just one. Deji Kareem on third down. What is that?
Say what you got to say and then move on. And you can also find us on Facebook.com/AlligatorPodcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. I hope Tom doesn't listen to this show. Anyway, yeah, like we said, I think we'll be back on Monday after the Florida State game. And we're going to be able to recap that. I'm really excited to talk some basketball and get Mr. Booth in here and maybe get Kyle back for as long as he's around. Because we had a pretty good show over the weekend. And, I mean, to be completely honest, I'm much more excited for basketball season than to close out football. So that's where you're going to get the real passion, the real fire out of us. But, yeah, we'll see you next week. And until then, thank you for listening. Oh, and have a happy Thanksgiving. Lean grind.